Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The game, game one Monday night, Preds and Carolina Hurricanes. And apparently, there are going to be more Carolina Hurricane fans in the building than originally believed. Now, we had Sean Henry on the show, team president, CEO of the Predators, the other day, and Sean was talking about the new ventilation system they've got in. I think it's that thing that pumps that cold air into the building for the ice. So it's going to like re-ventilate faster and all kinds of stuff, and 12,000 fans at Bridgestone Arena. But remember, Governor Lee came out on Clay Travis and said, oh yeah, no, I think everything should be 100%. But the governor doesn't necessarily get to dictate all of that. There's the league, there's the city, there's the country, there's the all these things that play into it. Well, I'm reading from the Raleigh News Observer. Quote, the Carolina Hurricanes will have a larger than expected home ice advantage in the Stanley Cup playoffs, though exactly how much larger is still in question. This we do know. Governor Roy Cooper announced Friday that effective immediately, he was lifting several of the state's COVID-19 restrictions, including those on mandatory indoor capacities and social distancing, effectively opening the door for the Hurricanes to bring as many fans into PNC Arena as the NHL will allow. So here's what's happened. The Predators worked something out. I'm sure they worked really hard with the state, at the federal level, at the local level, and at the league level. And I heard Elliot Friedman on the other day on Darren Donick and Chase, he said that they're locking down again in Canada, which to me is, and I'm not a political guy and whatever, like that's a no-go for me. But, anywho, that's where the league office is. So things are different in Canada where they're from. But the Predators obviously worked with the league office, and the league approved for 12,100, whatever it is, fans that are going to be allowed into Bridgestone Arena. And now, just now, the North Carolina governor gives the okay for the Canes to go to the league. And I'm guessing the Canes are going to the league like every six-year-old does when their seven-year-old sibling gets to do something that they want to do and say, but he gets to have 12,000 fans and we want 12,000 fans. And I have to ask this question. In a sport where it is debated consistently how important home ice advantage is in the playoffs, why do we think that the governor of Carolina, or North Carolina, why the governor of North Carolina, and I don't know who it is, but the governor of North Carolina is so eager to acquiesce. Apparently the general manager of the team of the Carolina Hurricanes, Don Waddell, said, I love this, quote, the governor's a big hockey fan. I know he heard about it from a lot of people on social media. Ah, that's great. That's where we're politicians are making decisions based upon social media ads.
We love Twitter.
Although then again, that's nothing new. So anywho, that's kind of what they said there. So Carolina expanding to 12,000-ish fans, game one Monday night. What do we make of it?
I mean, why wouldn't you? Like, if you know that your team is going to have to travel to Bridgestone Arena, who has a newly increased capacity with fans that are known to be quite rowdy and quite loud, why wouldn't you go to the league office and say, hey, can we get that same advantage too? I mean, I don't blame them. I think it's funny and kind of petty and kind of like, oh, well, you know, like you said, like we want fans. We want to have 12,000 fans too because we're going to be scared when we go to Nashville. I don't blame them. I would do the same thing if I were him.
So this is what I think. You know who the owner of the Canes is, right?
I do not.
It's that Tom Dundon who bought the AAF and then immediately defunded it.
Oh.
He wanted the gambling app or whatever for the AAF.
Mm-hmm.
So he bought it because they didn't have any money. And then when he saw how much money they were losing, he defunded it immediately, took the information I guess he got from the app. And I don't know if that's helped him or hurt him or whatever. But it's that Tom Dundon. And I'm guessing that he decided that he probably wants every seat filled. You know, based upon what we know about this guy
yeah.
and how much, you know, he values the dollar. He probably wants every seat in that building filled. So I think they used the hockey excuse of, hey, Nashville's got an unbelievable atmosphere. Nashville's got an unbelievable crowd. And if we're going to compete, we need to have as many fans in the building as they have. And that gets the fans riled up because the fans obviously want to win. And so imagine if the owner came out and said, hey, we want to have 12,000 fans because I want to make more money. I don't think you'd see a lot of fans get all worked up about it. You say, hey, the Predators have an unbelievable home advantage. They want to pack the stands with as many people as they can. So we need to go. We need to get everything lifted. We need to go for it. Go forward. Let's do it. And you push that to the governor, and then maybe that's, oh, look at all these fans that are possible voters. So this is something I need to look into. Now, again, I don't know the North Carolina governor. Like, I will say this. What I do know of governors is there are some governors out there that are, like, of one political party, but they're good at governing. Like, they're of a political party, but it's not all the constant acquiescing to whatever that political party's television cable news channel is saying. Then there are governors who literally only care what the cable news channel is saying. And then whatever they're saying, they'll say. And I don't know what this guy of North Carolina is. I think North Carolina is a very purple state. So maybe, honestly, it was the CDC coming out about mask wearing and vaccinations and him saying, okay, you know, in Nashville, for example, they got rid of the mask mandate today. So maybe that's just a thing around the country. But I saw this, and it literally felt like the Canes went to the league and said, but they get to have 12,000 fans. And I do wonder, you know, as we talk about this series, I do wonder how much of a mental swing will it be if the Predators take a game at PNC Arena and turn around knowing that they have to come back to Bridgestone Arena. And I'd argue that I feel pretty good about that possibility. And I think that's maybe now one of the keys to the series, because the Canes themselves are the ones selling it. So we shall see. But I would prefer them have less fans. Again, I don't know how much it matters, the amount of fans. I was there last Saturday night, 33% capacity, and it felt like a sold-out Saturday night in Smashville. So who knows what this will mean. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. We'll get his thoughts. We will ask him this question. Does he agree if, in fact, John Hines does decide not to play Elie Tolvanen? Does he agree with it? Plus, does he think UC Soros can pull it out against the Carolina Hurricanes? That's next. Stillman & Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We're live from the Whole Sonic Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. I love Fireball Sin Whiskey. Celebrate the playoffs. They're here. That's right. No better way to do it than by celebrating with ice-cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. I remember putting out a tweet after a 5-0 win at Chicago one time. I put out a tweet of 5 Fireball shots in a row to celebrate. That's right, to celebrate the 5-0 victory.
Lot of Fireball.
I'm not saying you should do that, but I'm just saying you can do that. Fireball Sin Whiskey, please drink responsibly. Please be 21 years or older to enjoy. That's Fireball Sin Whiskey. Ignite the night. Stillman & Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company again. The Carolina Hurricanes expanding. They are expanding their capacity to be roughly what the Predators have for game one. And John Hines was on the morning show. Ian, if you could, John Hines was on Robbie and Rex Road this morning and was talking about Elie Tolvanen and perhaps made it sound like there's a chance Elie Tolvanen is not in the lineup. Here's what John Hines said.
You know, I think he was, he really got some traction there, and then he got hurt. And then since he's come back off his injury, I know he's working and trying. We're working with him. But, you know, he hasn't had the same impact as he's had 5-on-5 or on the power play. So, you know, I think it's the combination of the coaches trying to help the player, but, you know, it ultimately comes down to the player being able to play at a level that we feel he's going to be able to help us win. So, you know, that'll be a decision we'll have to make, whether he's in or out.
So I say if he's out, it's a decision I disagree with. Corey Curtis, News 2, joins us now on the program. Corey, what do you think? Let's start there with this series. Let's start with the Tolvanen and Fabbro decisions about whether or not those guys make it into the lineup. How do you feel?
He's got a lot of choices, and I don't blame him for going with the best ones. And, you know, he's got guys who are contributing right now and have a hot hand right now, and you carry that many guys for a reason. You know, it's not like you're sitting Derrick Henry down here, okay? It's a young guy, like he said. I mean, he's exactly right. He got a lot of traction, and since he's come back from the injury, hasn't had quite the same impact, and the team has kept on rolling. Doesn't mean he's not going to play at all in the series. This means he likes some other options, possibly more for this first game. It's his call. I mean, that's what he gets paid the big dollars, to make those decisions.
So I don't know Ellie Tolvanen, and I don't know Dante Fabro very well, but I struggle with the idea of sitting a 22-year-old, a 21-year-old, I think, in the case of Tolvanen. I struggle with sitting that guy down, putting a guy like Brad Richardson or Eric Goodbranson in their place and trying to sell to them that, hey, we still believe in you, you're still a big part of our future, you're still this, you're still that, when you will hold them out in the playoffs, especially somebody like Fabro, who has already played in 10 playoff games in his career and is kind of now starting to no longer be a young player anymore. I worry about the long-term effects there. Do you consider those at all, and do you think Hines and Poyle consider that, or do you think they just look at game one versus Carolina, what gives them a best chance to win?
How many of those playoff games has Dante Fabro won?
Two in the Dallas
series,
right? One in the Arizona, three.
Yeah, not many. But and I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying it's not like he's carried them to victory. I think the psychological impact is real, and that's why you got to know your players, and you got to know your players, and you got to know how that decision is going to impact them. Are they mature enough to handle it? Are they emotionally strong enough, or are they too fragile to handle it? I think that those are that's upon the team to understand who they've got on their roster, because there are guys who can't handle that scenario. And so, yeah, I think that that has to go into the decision making. But I will also say this, if a decision like that is going to make a guy crumble and disappear, is he a guy that you want long term on your hockey team anyway?
Mm-hmm. Corey, do you think UC Soros can steal a series?
Sure. Look, remember that series that the Preds lost was in six in Arizona when Smith just...
Mike Smith was fantastic. But that Predators team couldn't score much either. This Carolina team is a lot better offensively and probably a lot better in general than this Predators team.
I would agree with that, but I mean he won that series. I mean, there was no question about it. I mean, they could not get anything past that dude. And look, I mean, he has been scorching hot. And when you look at playoff hockey, what happens in playoff hockey? Things tighten up. Scores get lower. He doesn't have to steal three or four goals. He just has to steal one or two to possibly make a difference. I thought it was interesting what John Hines had to say the other day about the long rest, he wasn't afraid of it, and I guess you can't be because it's just a reality. But I know there's concern that, this much time off could hurt UC Soros because kind of in the zone. And we'll see if he's still in that zone when he get back. But, I mean, we've seen it too many times where a hot goalie can just neutralize even a great team. And look, to win this series, he's going to have to keep playing at this level. I mean, anything less, and they're not getting through.
I have a theory on this series. Corey Curtis, News 2, is our guest. I think in order to win it, Soros has to steal two games. They have to get lucky one game, like a puck goes off the shoulder, off the skate, into the, that kind of thing. And then I think they just have to go out and beat Carolina in a game this series. And I don't think it's impossible. I put my chances at 20% of the Predators winning this playoff series. How do you feel in terms of the path to victory in this series against Carolina?
Well, I just think they got to play them in a phone booth, and they got to grind them and just wear on them. And, it wouldn't hurt to get one of the two in Carolina and put the pressure on them. Because, when you're a team that wins the division and, you're pushing up there for one of the top teams in the league and you're in an early hole, it can be pucker time, because you're supposed to win that series. And so I think, getting one early, I think is very important for this team. And I think setting that tone in the first two games in Carolina is going to be very important as well, to let them know that you may beat us in this series, but you're going to know it when it's over. You're going to feel it when it's over, every bit of it. And I think that, how they play them is going to be as important as the outcome, as ridiculous as that may sound, because I think it could have a longer-lasting toll as the series goes on.
Corey, I asked Terry Crisp this question yesterday, and I do feel like Crispy, shoots it to me like it is. And
yeah.
I asked him, a lot of hockey guys will tell you, Barry Melrose has told us for years, that he doesn't really believe in home ice. He's like, it's good for the fans and it's good for the owner, but how much does it really matter? And I asked Mattias Ekholm about it yesterday, and he was talking about, you know, the chills that he gets thinking about playing playoff hockey in Bridgestone Arena. I asked Crispy about it yesterday. Crispy says in this case, with this team and the young guys on it and the new guys on it, he thinks playing home games at Bridgestone Arena is going to make a difference. I think the way you sell this to the team internally, not coach speak or anything like that, is take one at Carolina and go win at Bridgestone Arena. Take one of those first two and go win at Bridgestone Arena. Do you value the home ice in this series as much as perhaps Crispy or Mattias Ekholm do?
I understand the notion that, home ice, I think when you're playing the heavy hitters, it doesn't mean as much because they can go play just about anywhere. But I agree that, you know, for this team, I mean, you saw as the crowds got bigger and the juices got full, you could see it with this hockey team. You could see the energy and the hop pick up with this hockey team. I think, you know, there are enough new players on this team that are feeling this for the first time where I do think it can take them to another level. Now, ultimately, I don't think that that's enough to win you a series, but it can help elevate some guys to be a little stronger for a little longer than they would be. I think these last couple of games gave us a sense of that, and I think it also gave the players a sense of how things can be different here in the playoffs.
Okay, I'm going to put you in the coach's position. I believe that Philip Forsberg, Luke Cunningham, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, Cali Yarncroke, Mikael Granlund, Erik Haula, and that herd line, that fourth line, I think all those guys are locks to make the game one lineup, which leaves one spot. Tolvanen, Cousins, Richardson, Grimaldi, or 85% of Arvidsson. And I am just arbitrarily throwing out 85% Arvidsson. He could be 100%. He could be 20%. I don't know. But I'm saying 85% Arvidsson just for the for this exercise. Which one would you put in there?
You know, I need 100. I need 95% Arvidsson, okay? Because we've seen 85% Arvidsson, and it doesn't produce a whole lot.
Especially in a series where you're going to have to be physical and push him around.
And that's why I'm leaning towards Cousins, because I think Cousins can go out there and throw himself around a little bit, throw some people around a little bit. I like Cousins, and Richardson's been here before. I think I would lean towards one of those guys, and if you think you're going to need, if you think you need him on the power play, then Tolvanen. But I think I would lean towards Cousins, but, you know, you could make an argument for any of them. And I don't dislike Grimaldi, I don't, but he's kind of a wild card where you pick up, you know, you shuffle the rocks or the cups around and then you pick one up and once in a while you hit it. And that's the way Grimaldi is. Once in a while, you know, he scores two goals in a game or scores three goals or four goals in a game, but then he goes 15 games in a row without one. And I would like to know a little bit more what you're going to get. And like I said, with the physicality of this series, I think I'd put Cousins out there.
What has to happen if you're John Hines for Pekka Rinne to play this series? Is it just an injury to Saros, or would you make a flip if, say, things don't go your way in Carolina?
Well, look, I don't. He would have to play horribly for more than one game for Pekka. I mean, they'd have to be like down 3-0, and he played three subpar games in a row. That's the only way I see. I mean, he's married to UC Saros at this point, and UC Saros has done everything to earn the net here down the stretch. He's been utterly fantastic. You know me, I'm as big of a Pekka Rinne guy as they come, and that last game for him was unbelievable. He was unbelievable. I would not be afraid to see him in the net, but I don't see a scenario where he's like, well, we're going to give Pekka a start in this one, or hey, Juice wasn't real sharp in the last one. Now, if he's hurting, then yeah. Then make the move, but other than that, you know, they're gonna be on life support, and he's not playing great. This is the only way I can see a performance switch. It's not just gonna be one or two games.
I mean, I'll say with you, Corey, that I felt like last year in the Arizona series after the first three games, Saros was okay, but that, you know,
I
would have made the move.
I
would have made the move then. Now I think Saros has earned that kind of position of he has to either flat out suck or be hurt before you put Pekka in, and that's no disrespect to Pekka. Corey Curtis, News 2, is our guest, Fireball Hot Take Friday. What's your Fireball Hot Take this week, Corey?
You know, I it's not a scorching, flaming hot take, but I know there are a lot of people who feel really good about this series because of the way this team played and because they won those games, you know, to finish the season. And they hearken back to 4 years ago when they went in and they swept the Chicago Blackhawks. And I'm not going to say that it's impossible to happen, but I just can't pick the Predators to win this series. Carolina is awfully good. I'm not saying they can't do it, but I'm just not picking them. I do think it goes 6 or 7, and I think it's going to be a heck of a series.
So would I put you down for Carolina in 6 or Carolina in 7?
Oh, good golly. You know what? To be dramatic, I'll say 7.
Carolina in 7. Oof. Oof. Poor Ryan Porth. That's the day of his wedding. And then they lose. That would not be fun to be the program director of the radio station as Predators Radio Network. I'm sure like a third of the people. Oh yeah, a third of the people that are invited probably to this wedding have a humongous interest in that game, and then they go out there and lose. I'm sure that's not a great position to be. Corey Curtis,
one of my brothers got married when the Bears played the Vikings on like Thursday Night Football or something. And I just remember everybody huddled around the TV at the reception and the parents not being very happy.
Oh, yes, yes. That's why I will be getting married, if I ever do get married, knock on wood, I will be getting married on, like, July 11th. So whatever that does, save the date. July 11th, 2028, Corey. Hopefully you're okay. Still around by then. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, if I'm still alive. Yeah.
Knock on wood. Corey Curtis, News 2, as always, joins us on the program. Corey, appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Bye.
Yep, Corey Curtis joining us on the program. I hope Corey's not upset that I'm sitting there talking about, you know, if you're around. I just meant like if he's around Nashville. I didn't mean like if he's around, if he's alive.
Yeah, that was awfully morbid.
I just meant around, like around the city.
I thought you meant alive.
Well,
like,
I mean,
he's not an old guy.
It's like, what's his name? Kyle Shanahan said. I mean, there's a...
I can't guarantee anyone will be alive on Sunday.
Can't guarantee that.
Or July 11th.
2028. Whatever that may be. But, you know, Corey takes great care of himself. He does triathlons or Ironmans or one of the
good
other.
For him.
He definitely takes care of himself. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We're going to hit the headlines with Caroline coming up next. But, again, we got a ton of stuff to get to as far as the Preds and the Canes are concerned. Buying or selling a car is one of the biggest financial decisions you can make. My friends at Edmunds will take the headaches and guesswork out of car shopping for you. They are pros, and they've been helping people like you and me for over 50 years. Edmunds.com was the first auto information website. They're experts at buying and selling. Did you know that the pros at Edmunds test drive over 300 new cars a year? So if you're going to say, I've got 12 cars I might be interested in, go to Edmunds.com, read what the Edmunds editorial team writes. It saves you so much time from having to go to the dealership and test drive a car and see if you like it. Then you got to do it 11 more times. No, sir. Edmunds.com is the place to go. Again, they have knowledgeable vehicle testing editors with in-depth reviews. And again, over 300 new vehicles a year. Whether you're just browsing or you know exactly what you want, Edmunds gives you that extra boost of confidence. Visit Edmunds.com to get started, because for cars, there's Edmunds. How would you like to be John Hines? Again, the idea that he's got, he really has. I mean, this is nuts. He's got two spots for Tolvanen, Cousins, Richardson, Rocco, and whatever percent you want to name it of Victor Arvidsson. Adam Vingan going to join us at 4 o'clock. Adam in The Athletic put out his line combos. He goes Forsberg, Johansson, Tolvanen, Yarncroak, Granlin, Cunnin, Arvidsson, Halla, Deshane, and then the herd line. I have a hard time with Arvidsson. And I don't know the percentage for Arvidsson. I don't. But I have a hard time rolling with Arvidsson. I mean, I need physical guys. I need guys that do things in the playoffs. Arvidsson simply just hasn't been that guy. ESPN 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren, Donick, and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 102.5 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. It's time for Headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman and Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Christian Yelich is in town.
I saw this.
Christian Yelich is in Nashville, so he's on rehab assignment. He's had a little bit of a back issue that has...
The 2019 National League MVP?
2018 National League MVP. Yep, so we got a little celebrity in town. I know there's not a lot of those in Nashville. But he's had a back injury that's kind of been bothering him all season. He's appeared in, I think, maybe one Brewers game so far this season. So he will be rehabbing with the Sounds tonight. So if you're going to the Sounds game, you'll see... Christian Yelich, 2018 National League MVP.
So I have decided that unless you're like a Hall of Famer, I'm not going to get excited for a Sounds rehab assignment. And the only reason
why... It's Christian Yelich!
I know. But the only reason why is because when I was a kid, John Rocker got sent down to, I think, Texas had him or Cleveland had him or something. And the line for the John Rocker autographs at the Sounds game was just... through the roof. Just through the roof. And I got a John Rocker autograph. And in hindsight, I think about how many people lined up to get the autograph, including yours truly. Now I was like 8 or 9.
Aww.
Of a homophobic, racist, you know, you want to name it, John Rockers. It's steroid using, you know, John Rocker. And not to say that Christian Yelich is any of those things. I'm not. I'm just telling the story about John Rocker. And that has led me that, like, it's got to be, for me to get juiced up, it's got to be like Mike Trout is on a rehab assignment.
You are so difficult to please.
With Salt Lake or
he
something
like
that. He
has the biggest contract in Brewers franchise history, 2018 National League MVP, one of the best players in the league.
I'm just glad.
But that's not good enough for you?
I'm just glad he's on a rehab assignment. Because the Braves are playing the Brewers, and the Braves suck, so the Braves need as much help as they can get, so him not being on the Brewers. That's how I feel about it. But you know what? Good for the Sounds.
I'm excited.
I just hope he doesn't take any playing time away from Corey Ray. Do not take any playing time away from Corey Ray. Oh, my goodness.
Such a homer. Such a Louisville homer.
My buddy, who also played at Louisville, pitched on the Marlins in 2016, and every now and then he'll just look at me and go, we had an outfield of Marcell Ozuna, Christian Yelich and Giancarlo Stanton, and we sucked. And I was like, ooh. I go, maybe if you pitched a little bit better, things might have been a little bit better.
There's something to that. That's fair.
What's next?
So Antonio Brown is in legal news yet again today. So there's
yet again.
I feel like this is like a new recurring thing that it's like, just when I start to forget that Antonio Brown, like, exists, he does something illegal again. So, back in 2020, there was a truck driver. His name is Anton Tumanov. He filed the civil lawsuit on Wednesday, but this happened last year. Antonio Brown, he's a truck driver, is delivering packages, and Antonio Brown refused to pay the $4,000 fee that needed to drop off the boxes at his house. I don't know what he bought. I don't know what was $4,000 worth, but that's beside the point. Antonio Brown refused to pay the money and threw rocks at the truck driver's truck. The truck driver came back when Antonio Brown agreed to pay the $4,000, but refused to pay the $900-ish to repair his truck. So now he is suing him for severe bodily injuries, pecuniary losses, and mental anguish.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, when you're rich and famous and you get sued, you're going to get sued for more than just whatever you did or didn't do. Like, they're going to tackle a
good. It wasn't okay what he did.
No, but there's always going to be a little tacking on. You know, the pain and suffering, the whatever you want to call it, that's going to get tacked on. I've watched enough. You know, I'm not Chris Sanders. I don't sit by the TV and watch Judge Judy every day. But I've watched
very
enough of that to, like, get an idea.
He doesn't peg me as a Judge Judy kind of guy.
Oh, Ian, back me up on this.
Chris Sanders loves Judge Judy.
That's
loves
hilarious.
Judge Judy. I think he thinks Judge Judy's hot.
I love that.
But that's neither here nor there. but anywho, I can't believe I said that. But I think that is true. But
yeah, I'll ask him next week when he's on.
Antonio Brown, I mean, he's a bad dude. Like, yeah. I mean, now you can go back to that hit in the head that Vontaze Burfict gave him in the playoff game, because I think there's a lot of people that think that AB has never been the same since he got that hit in the head. And we've seen like what brain trauma does, like to depression and anger and things like
that. Just irrational behavior.
And he certainly exemplifies that, or exemplifies. He certainly is the poster child of just off the wall behavior. I'm worried about AB.
I am too.
Every 6 months, there's a new AB story that's like this. And I'm worried about him. And part of me thinks that if Tom Brady's not there, because he clearly wouldn't listen to John Gruden when he was with the Raiders, wouldn't listen to Mike Mayock, didn't want to listen to Big Ben, didn't want to listen to Mike Tomlin, didn't want to listen. Brady seems to be the only guy who can get through to Antonio Brown. And it feels to me like the second that that relationship is over, whether Tom retires, AB retires, they both retire, AB gets cut, whatever, I worry about AB's well-being.
It's been scary for almost 2 years now. It started with he had frostbites on his feet, and then there were sexual assault allegations that came out against him, and then there just continues to be a lot of like physically abusive charges against Antonio Brown, and it's sad and it's scary, and it scares me for the future of football players when this starts to become just kind of like an every, like you said, an every 6 month thing with AB. It doesn't seem that there's an end in sight, but onto the NHL news. Greg Wyshynski reported today, NHL beat writer for ESPN. He said that the NHL gave the Canadian government a deadline of June 1st for an answer about the travel ban at the border in Canada. So this isn't going to be an issue until about the second round of the playoffs.
This is that mandatory.
It's a mandatory quarantine. Right. Yeah. So whenever you travel to Canada from the United States or wherever it may be, there's a mandatory quarantine period, and that would not work within the postseason schedule. And so this isn't a problem now because it's just divisional playoffs, so all of the teams in the North are in Canada, but it will become an issue whenever the teams in the North start to play teams that are in the U.S. Now, they've said they can either waive that mandatory quarantine period just for the NHL, given all of the regulations and vaccinations, and there's been a bubble, so they can either waive that and travel to Canada, or they've also posed an option where the Canadian teams can host from arenas in the U.S. of teams that are not in the playoffs. But there will be fans allowed at those games because currently there are no fans allowed at Canadian games. So if they do host, let's say, you know, in Detroit, fans will be allowed to go to those games in Detroit.
Sure. I think what you're looking at is Detroit or Buffalo. Probably going to be where we see a Canadian team play. I don't think Canada's going to change the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would make sense, you know, if it's the Maple Leafs, you might as well just go ahead and put it in Detroit. It's a quick little drive over the bridge or whatever it is. I think that's probably what you'll see. Detroit or Buffalo, I think, are probably your two options.
I did drive to Canada from Buffalo. It was a fun little drive.
Why were you in Buffalo?
My best friend lives there. Went to go visit her, and then we went to... Why am I blanking on the name of water?
Niagara Falls.
That's where we went.
There you go.
It was a blast.
Those are headlines with Caroline. Let's take a call. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I've never been to Niagara Falls, by the way.
It's beautiful. I'll show you pictures.
It's a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chad wants to get in on the Preds and the Carolina Hurricanes. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Chad.
Hey, brother. I've been a pretty long-time loyal listener, and we've had a few. But on this one... Yeah, this one's not looking good for the Predators. You can put a homer spin on it. But when you look at kind of Predators are almost being played, final two regular season games against each other, the way they – I feel like they kind of threw the Preds, and in good character and good etiquette, I think Pekka kind of got a little – I think he got a nice gift there. I don't think they tried very hard. I think that was a gift wrap. a shutout, and I think the Preds lose this one. I'm going to say in a sweep. I think it's going to get ugly in Nashville this time next week.
Thank you for your call. I don't think there's a homer spin on this. I mean, I've said that the Predators have a 20% chance of winning the series. That's a 1-in-5 shot. That means I'm giving Carolina a 4-out-of-5 shot. I mean, I don't want to speak for you guys, but my gut is you guys probably think Carolina's going to win the series too.
Yes.
Ian?
Yes.
I mean, so the idea that it's like, well, you know, look, fans are going to be fans. the Buffalo Sabres could qualify for the playoffs, and the fans of the Buffalo Sabres would try to argue that the Buffalo Sabres could win because, hey, anything can happen. That's like when I was a kid and I used to dream of Vanderbilt winning the SEC. If Vanderbilt goes to Athens and beats Georgia, they can do it. They're just not very likely to do so. I mean, I think I'll have more of a feeling on it if they can take game one or game two with Carolina and then say, okay, now I see a path. But right now, the path seems to be very difficult to me for me envisioning that they're going to beat Carolina. I don't take anything away from the last game against the Hurricanes. I take a lot away from the Saturday night, but I take even more away from the two games that they played there about a month ago. I take a lot from those two games, and it wasn't very pretty. I mean, they got absolutely dominated in those games. Adam Vingan will join us at 4 o'clock for the entire hour. So if you've got a question for Adam, get it in. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Rookie minicamp for the Titans. It's like because of COVID, I've forgotten about rookie minicamp. There are two stories that really matter out of Titans minicamp, and then there's a couple little side things that matter too, but there's two big things that matter out of Titans rookie minicamp. One of them will totally overshadow the other if it happens. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5, the game.
As far as you feeling just like you've worked through it, how are you from that standpoint? Do you feel like you're ready to go at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I feel great, but it's this type of procedures, things like that. It's not really about how you feel; it's about just following protocol. Yeah, because you know, like I said, I woke up from surgery and walked out of the hospital a day later, jumped on a flight from L.A. to Virginia to go to pro day. You know, feeling great. It's not about how you feel though; it's just about strengthening your body back up, making sure you're doing the right exercises, the right rehab and treatments. And I'm giving it the time it needs to rest. So I'm thankful to be at a program that is helping me understand that and, you know, has a great plan for me once I get back. And that's really what I'm doing now. But I feel great, man. I'm excited to have this thing behind me.
That was Caleb Farley, Titans' first-round pick on Talking with TD. By the way, the lineup TD has on the Talking with TD podcast: Mike Wells, ESPN Colts reporter, Lewis Riddick on the Titans draft, Caleb Farley. I mean, it is a loaded podcast. But you heard right there, Caleb Farley said, oh, no, I'm ready to go right now. I had surgery. I walked out of the hospital, went over to pro day. I'm ready to go. And I know that the Titans are going to be a little bit more cautious with a guy that they just gave a fully guaranteed contract to, although I believe that's kind of the standard for that spot. But for a guy that they just guaranteed 4 years and a bunch of money to, they're probably going to be a little bit more cautious on May 14th and May 15th and May 16th than they would be with the Titans rookie minicamp. To me, there are two stories that matter, two that have legitimate legs to. I mean, everything else, we can get into each guy and how each guy, you know, can Des Fitzpatrick play the slot? Is Des Fitzpatrick playing outside? Is Des Fitzpatrick, we can get into all of that. But the first is Caleb Farley going to participate? Because you heard Caleb Farley talking there with TD, and it sounds like Caleb Farley says, oh, yeah, I can get out there and go cover right now. Go ahead and put me on Racy McMath. Just put me out there. I don't think the Titans are going to play Caleb Farley or practice him this week in the rookie minicamp. In fact, it would almost be kind of stupid to go out there and put him there, but fine. I think that's the biggest story. And if he does get out there, then it dwarfs what is the second story, which is the Rashad Weaver news. Now, we know what happened with Rashad Weaver last week. We know we have the Paul Kaharsky report in which he says he's talked to scouts who said they knew before the Saturday of the draft in which Weaver was selected, they knew. And I've heard it both ways. Like, I have heard people that, I think it went on record. I've heard people that have said that they don't believe the merits of Paul's report. They believe Paul's report. They just don't believe the merits of Paul's report. I am not one of those people. I believe it. I believe that there were teams that knew. And I don't think Kaharsky's getting lied to over that. That's just me. So I believe it. And I do believe Mike Vrabel will be asked when he has his press conference tomorrow what they knew about Rashad Weaver, what then was discussed with Rashad Weaver after it happened, or after it came out, what kind of discussion did they have. What did they know? What did they not know? What did other teams know? Do they know what other teams knew? I think all of that becomes legitimate questions for Mike Vrabel. Kind of unfair because I don't think that's Vrabel's department. You know, that's Robinson, who oversees the director of player personnel and the director of pro scouting and the director of college scouting and then all the regional scouts and the national scouts. And that's Robinson's department. That's not Vrabel's department. But when the head coach has a press conference, he is the leader of the football team at that point. I think Vrabel's going to be asked about it. And I think Vrabel's going to be in a tough spot. Now, this isn't the first time Vrabel's ever been put in a tough spot. But I think Vrabel's going to be put in a tough spot. He's going to be asked about Rashad Weaver, what they knew, what they didn't know. My guess is Mike's going to give you one straight-up non-answer, and he's not going to talk about it. And I'm not going to say that's weak, because if you don't have anything nice to say or you don't have anything that could help you, it's probably not beneficial to go out of your way to hurt yourself to say, oh, yeah, we didn't know and nobody else around the league claims they knew. But then we talked to other teams around the league and they did know and now we look dumb. I mean, he's not going to say that. But I think that's kind of a story. But it becomes a non-story if Caleb Farley practices, because if Caleb Farley practices, then every single question is going to be, how did Caleb Farley look? What made you feel comfortable putting Caleb Farley out there? How did you feel like Caleb Farley ran? How do you feel like Caleb Farley will become training camp? How slow will you take it when it comes to training camp? How important? So everything becomes about Caleb Farley if Caleb Farley participates. If not, then it all becomes about Rashad Weaver. And then everybody else, like, no offense, who cares about Monty Rice? I mean, these are important football questions, but I don't think that they're like meaningful storylines at minicamp. What Brady Breeze does in a rookie minicamp, I don't even know who's going to be the quarterback throwing passes in a rookie minicamp, but I feel like, you know, those are kind of the two storylines. And not to say that if the Titans want to avoid bad press or something like that, we'll be on to the Predators Monday. But if the Titans really want to avoid the Weaver issue, then Caleb Farley will get out there. But I don't, without knowing everything there is to know about these kind of back injuries, I highly doubt we'll see Caleb Farley participate in rookie minicamp.
And I don't think that they would put Caleb Farley out there just to avoid another storyline.
Right. That's what a really stupid team would do, and I don't think the Titans are really stupid.
Especially if he's not 100% ready. I mean, if he's out there, I think it will be because he feels ready, his doctors have cleared him, and the team, the doctors, and Caleb Farley all agree that that's the best possible thing to do. I am not a doctor, but I personally wouldn't.
Sure. I mean, like, again,
it just feels like too high of a risk. That's not much reward.
That's something that the Washington football team would do. Like, you know, again, something stupid, you know, like, so the Washington football team has been accused of being racist for forever, right? And now they're accused of
their front office has been accused of being racist. Yes.
Sure. And kind of, you know, I mean, the team's name was.
Yeah, that wasn't great. There's a reason why they're the Washington football team.
And now the team last year, I think, really got accused of being sexist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now the Washington football team, they're hiring minorities, people into very important positions of power. They're hiring women into very important positions of power. And I'm for that. Like, I'm for it totally. But because I know the Washington football team, I feel like because I know Dan Snyder, mm-hmm. I feel like it's just totally reactive to the situation, right? It's like, I'm not racist. Look, I'm not racist. I'm not sexist. I hired. And it, like, that's, again, that's what a dumb team does, is they do something where now you question the merits of the people being hired, even though I don't know anything about these people. They could be great people, and I'm for that. I think best person for the job should get the job. If the best person to coach Tennessee Titans is a woman, I have no problem with her coaching. Zero. But I question Washington's merits because I think Washington's a dumb organization. I don't think the Titans are a dumb organization. Dumb organizations do things for the story. And I don't think the Titans do that. So I think Vrabel's going to get peppered on the Rashad Weaver thing. So we'll see how that goes this weekend. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Adam Vingan will join us for the next hour with his thoughts on the Preds and Carolina Hurricanes. Again, the analytics says one thing or another. What does Adam
the
say
analytics?
About the series?
The what?
Well, I don't care what the analytics say. I said they say one thing or another. I told you 20%. No analytics based on that. I give him a 20% chance. Adam Vinga next. Stillman and Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.